All right, what's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Brooklyn Boxing Podcast. I'm here with Dennis Hogan, all the way from Australia. How's it going, man?
I'm good, thanks, buddy. It's good to see you again and chat to you again.
Yeah, no, it's good to see you. I think, you know, the first time meeting you in person, we were in Brooklyn in Gleason's gym prior to your last fight. And it was cool getting to see you, you know, up close and personal on the mitts with your team. You know, I could tell you and your team were a group of good guys. So it was good to see that.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I remember that also. You were at the press conference as well before that?
So I had I was at the open workout and, you know, got to see you work the mitts and get a little sweat in. It was a cool time. That's a really cool gym, Gleason's gym in Brooklyn. And it's got a lot of character to it, right?
It really has. You know, I've actually done camps over there before. I've been in there quite a lot and sparring with all the guys and that. And they're very, very welcoming guys, especially Don Saxby and that. You know, when I meet him again, every time I see him, it's like seeing a friend again for a long time. And the vibe there is good. I really enjoy going in there and doing a bit. So it gives you the extra bit. So
yeah, I'd imagine it's kind of like some of the Irish boxing gyms, maybe from when you were young. I don't know if it kind of has that same feel to it at all, or, you know, I'd be curious to have you speak on that. Cause I don't know if you started boxing while you were in Ireland, correct?
Yeah. Like, I mean, as an amateur, or seven or so. But look, when I first went into Gleason's, I was actually sparring with Jared Fletcher for his fight with Jacobs. That was for the WBA world title, and when I walked in there, and you just see all the, you know, Mike Tyson had a little corner over there, and you see all the world champions around and all the banners, you know, home of this world champion and that world champion. You just really felt the prestige when you walked in there, so it gave a great feeling. And then I was lucky enough then to do some camps in there, pretty much finishing off my camps in there, and it's just a great feel to it. There's a real feeling of champions had come and gone from there, and that there was a feeling there was going to be more too. So always that feeling, always just kind of lights you up a little bit, you know what I mean? You kind of feel like you're in the mix, you know, that sort of feel.
Yeah, definitely. So you know, of course, you know, you're in Australia now, but you grew up in Ireland. You're an Irishman. We can tell by the red beard. I'm an Irishman too. I don't know if you can see a little red tint coming through. But
a bit of fire in there.
Yeah. I'd love you to talk about, I'm sure the fans are interested in sort of your start in boxing over in Ireland and kind of how you got into the sport, if it was a family thing, if one of your buddies got you into it, and really how you got your foot into the gym starting out.
Yeah, very, very young age. I don't even remember before that. So boxing has always been in my life, but as far as I can remember. But my grandfather was a local boxing coach, Paddy Burke. And so he used to bring my cousins, my brother Tristan, and me, and just picked us up along the way. He'd pick us all up along the way and bring us on in to the old army barracks in Nace. It's not there anymore, but we used to just go in there, and I was obviously younger than everybody. I was the youngest in there at the time, and I was just a little messer. But anyway, they nicknamed me Rocky because I think I used to run around hitting people and stuff. You know, that's how young I was. It was a good start, and I continued on, and then I started championships, and I was doing well as an 11 and 12 year old, and then. That was my start, but then obviously my grandfather then, you know, he started to get sick, and he was told no more cold nights because it was always freezing. There was no heating in those types of places. And so he had to stop going. And then I went up and linked up with Shamey Byrne and the Cliffords and that up in Grange Conn, another club. And that's where I finished out the rest of my amateur career and had lots of success up there with those boys as well, with Ross Hickey and that. So, it was a really good amateur start, to be honest. I was blessed to have good people around me. My grandpa, Shamey Byrne from Grange Conn, was very, very more so technical in that, in terms of what to do and all of that. But when I started, was in Nace again with my grandfather, and that more taught me that real tough, kind of gritty sort of. You know, they say you go back to your normal way of fighting when you're when you're tired or sort of in trouble or whatever. And
yeah.
And I think that I go back to that sort of just get down and just start throwing and just start that real fight. And I think that I learned that in there as a young kid, having to spar lots of guys. Like you could be there and you could have any amount of fellas in there, and I'd be sparring with all of them, and some of them would be really, really tough spars. But I think it made me tough and got me ready for what was to lie ahead. So to go when I went professional, etc.
So was your grandfather really who kind of, I know you said, you know, you've been boxing as long as you can remember and the start is almost blurry, but is your grandfather really the guy who kind of guided your start in the career, or were you really just, you were just so, you know, surrounded by boxing that it's just kind of, you didn't have a choice. You kind of just jumped right in.
Well, it was him. It was him, and it was both actually. But he was the reason why. You know, he brought us along, and every time I'd see him, you know, we talk about boxing, and eventually, you know, like even when he stopped boxing, you know, he was always all we talked about was boxing, and how I was doing and championships and stuff like that, and some of the things I wanted to do was win an Irish title and box for Ireland as well, which he got to see me do all of those things. He was a main reason why I kind of pushed on. He's a big reason of why I loved it, because that time when he stopped going, and then the season kicked back in, and it was a couple of weeks gone, and I knew all these guys, a couple of guys in school had gone back boxing, and they'd already gone back in September, and I hadn't gone back yet, and I was like, because before I used to feel like, you know, oh, we're going again, you know, training again. Like, he'd be there religiously. I think it was every Tuesday, Thursday night to pick you up and go. And you sort of like, oh, training again, you know, at a younger age and onwards. But it wasn't until he stopped that I realized, oh, the season's starting again and I'm not boxing. And then I really realized that it's actually me that loves this now. I'm not just being brought along and I love it, but he's always been one of my main inspirations in boxing. You know, even when he wasn't going anymore and I was boxing for another one. And then after he died, it became even more evident to me. I have his face tattooed on my stomach, and it reads, give it everything you've got, which were his actual last words to me. I know it sounds like something that, you know, it's just something that you could nearly make up or something, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't scripted, no nothing. And I'll never forget those last words. And that rang true to me even more when he died. And I did. I battened down and I did everything that I was supposed to do then. Like, 'cause before I had been sort of blasé, you know, I had no problem very close to fights, going off and having drinks and stuff like that and just messing and you living a life as well. But after that, I did give it everything I've got. And since he died in July 2011, I have given it everything that I've got. So that'll show you how much he's meant to me. But it's good because boxing is my love. It is my passion. And I live my values through boxing also. So I believe that, you know, that start set me on this journey that I'm on and who I've become and everything involved. So, yeah.
Yep. Yeah, it reminds me, you know, when you mentioned, you know, values and boxing and like how that all ties together. You know, I was watching a little clip the other day with Teddy Atlas talking about Cus D'Amato and sort of his life. And Cus, you know, obviously a famous trainer who guided Tyson's career. And, you know, he wasn't married. He didn't really have much family or friends or anything. Like, his life was boxing. He was married to boxing. And Atlas talked a lot about how everything in life, you know, he tied back to boxing and the discipline of it and the lessons that you learn within the sport. And, you know, for people looking for guidance or, you know, a path to stay on track, boxing isn't an uncommon route. You know, it saves so many lives and keeps so many people on the right track. So, yeah, I totally understand that. And, you know, I think it's a cool story hearing you, you know, talk about how you used it to really stay focused. But as your career, you know, progressed in Ireland and, you know, you're having success on the amateur level, from a skill set perspective, you know, I know you mentioned you'd revert back to that brawling style a lot. Do you feel like that's the pressure you sort of brought in the amateur game to climb through the ranks, or was that really only when you were, you know, under duress, I guess?
Well, what happens to me is, it's if I really focus in on what I mean by that as well, it's, I know that, like, you know, when you're tired, you're exhausted and everything else, there's a part of me, yeah, of course I can move and, as they call it, box or move away, get your distance and everything. But when the pressure's really put on and, you know, you'll see, you know, someone trying to make a goal for me or whatever, I do. I drop the head and I throw big overhand rights and, you know, I'll really try to hurt them and like just try to stop them from what they're doing and try to win the exchange, you know, and I think that's a good thing to have because usually when someone's trying to get in and they're trying to, you know, dismantle you, get the better of you, especially in a certain area of a fight where you might look low. I think when you do that, it sort of, it sends the message, oh, this guy's not ready to go. This guy's not ready to do anything but fight. I've had some tough spars where I've been on the brink of exhaustion. And again, there's just something inside me that just keeps pushing, probably to my own detriment, you know, unless I get the right recovery, because I'll just keep going and going and going. And sometimes I probably, you know, in training and sparring, I need to be safe for myself because I'll always give it everything that I've got. So that's inside me anyway. Now I come to a fight fresh, prepared, ready, and I believe I can beat anybody. And I think that is a key route to it too. But also in terms of training, if I've got a long camp and I'm sort of doing that, and I'm just, you know, the more tired I get, the more I just keep sort of going harder and harder. That can be sort of bad too, because you can sort of overcook yourself. So I just need to have, you know, the right sort of strategy kind of and approach steady, from the start.
That kind of steady burn, kind of through camp. Yeah. Instead of, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, because I can just go boom and I can go all in. Well, if you look at Charlo, I mean, that's the WBC middleweight world championship. People only dream about getting a fight like that, you know. And yeah. We had to fly over for the conference and back again and go back again. But I really did, and we upped the volume as was felt necessary. But essentially, it got to a point where, you know, my body started to break down. I was getting injuries and all of that. And my fight or flight kicked in, you know. After the flight back to Miami 3 weeks out, after my first spar, I had a panic attack and all of that, which was a sign that I had overcooked myself. So that, you know, that actually happened to me as well before my loss in Germany. We'd gone over for a fight. We'd come back. I kept training like a madman. And by the time we went back again, I just wasn't me anymore. I'd overdone it. And the reason why I speak about this is because it's just, I think it's very, the Dennis Hogan, I feel, still hasn't really been seen yet. And so, you know, you can look at all of these things, but you got to take them in an intelligent, educated approach. And the two times where I've lost and I've boxed not to my best have been by pretty much overdoing it, and I'll put my hand up for that. That's my fault. There's times where I probably should take back a bit and not go as hard, but I just do it and do it and do it, and thinking if I can overcome this and it won't bear well, but it will bear well. But sometimes it just doesn't, and you can just fatigue your body, and then that fatigues your mind, and it's a horrible roller coaster after that, because you can't come back from that. So, but the good thing about all of that is I take this as a massive positive, to know that I was able to do all of that and still show up. And now I'll do it smarter again, but I'll show up at my best, I truly believe I will be world champion soon.
100%, and that, yeah, it's you know, it's interesting you talk about that. I know. Like I've been hearing from some fighters recently, even a UFC fighter, Glover Teixeira, who recently just won actually, like on Wednesday. But he mentioned he kind of had similar problems earlier in his career, or more recently actually, where he was overtraining himself and coming into fights a little slow, or he felt heavy in the legs and things like that, and he kind of had to reel things back. Which is, like, I'm sure, an interesting balance for you know, a fighter like yourself, because it's, you know, obviously you want to feel like you put in all the work necessary to get the job done, but it's like also balancing between, all right, you know, I got to save some gas in the tank here.
Yeah, that's it. Look, I also they say, you know, rest is a part of recovery. And if you're not getting the recovery in between sessions and you're sort of diminishing, you're getting, it's getting harder. And I feel, you know, maybe you need to pull it back a bit. So it's about being a little bit smarter like that. And again, you know, maybe our training was right. It just mattered that I had to go over for the press conference and back again. That was a 30-hour trip over, 30 hours back. And then afterwards, on top of all the training, injury started to occur. My quad started to lock up and all of that stuff. So in that, I've made the decision to have longer camps in the States. So I'm going to relocate. I'm still living here in Australia. I'll still train out of here. And I will still keep all my team, except I will be changing head coaches, because you can't have a head coach here and then go over there for longer camps. So I have relocated. So my next camp I'm linking up with Wayne McCullough, and he's in Los Angeles. It's 15 hours to Los Angeles. Very accomplished fighter and trainer, and you know, I've always grown up looking at him and hearing about his success and all of that. And after the last one, being here down in Australia, like, to be doing those types of trips over and over again just absolutely smashes you to the point where, you know, you nearly might need to pull back too much. So just looking forward, the positive in all of this is I will get myself to a really good fitness and base here. Then I will go over there for about 10 weeks at a time and have that time with Wayne, and be able to really be fresh for those fights, because getting over there 3 weeks before, yeah, it's all good and all that, but that flight really does take it out of you. There's something to it.
I'm sure. I mean, it takes a few days to recover from the time change, the flight itself, sitting all that time. So, you know, that kills a few days right off of those 3 weeks. So I totally get that.
Yeah. Yeah. But there's something to the body too about that travel. Like, it's, and maybe it was more about the circadian rhythm, just completely changing over from night to day. I think, because I did do it once. I fought Tyrone Brunson for the NABA title back in 2015. And we got there 5 or 6 days out. But I didn't change my rhythm. I actually slept mostly through the morning to the evening. And I'd wake up and I'd be awake through the evening and night. And then I'd go back to sleep again. And I still seem to have all the energy in the world. And I think that maybe it's the change between sleeping patterns that can affect you so much. But I know definitely when you're going over and back again, say for media and then coming back again, I know that can, I just feel like now I have everything that I need now moving forward, you know, so.
Definitely. So when do you think, you know, obviously everything's postponed now with everything going on, but, you know, what are you thinking in terms of your next fight or next move? When would you like that to happen, you know, towards the end of the summer, or you're trying to get back in there soon?
Mate, I want to get back in there ASAP. I was trying to see if I could have one real quickly in March, you know, but that didn't end up happening. But look, we're still contracted to have a fight with PBC. As we spoke about the fight for Charlo, you know, they had said, if you're unsuccessful, you're back at 164. One win and you're back for a title at 154. So that's still good. That contract is still there. And, you know, but the other thing is now I feel like it might be beneficial to, it would be beneficial to have a fight with Wayne first, you know, just a quick fight or whatever. And so I think we'll be aiming for that. And then, you know, we'll chat to PBC and see if it's all good with them that we have a fight first. And then, and then we can really zone in for that other, because that other one, you know, that other fight that you'd have to be against someone very relevant. Right. You know, like one of the top guys, you know, we were given a few names before and there's no easy fights there. So,
Shark Tank.
Yeah, it is. It is exactly. So I think a quick fight to get back in, get that bond with the fighter trainer sort of thing going, You know, get back another W too, I think, is always good for the confidence, and then try to zone in on that that contracted fight that we've been given. So all is good. I just want to get back ASAP, man. Like, I'm already looking now. I know a lady over there now, Taylor Christie. She does digital marketing and stuff like that. She's done journalism in the past and all. And she's gone over for work, and she said that to get a visa to fly into the States right now, you got to show so much that it's for work, and you got to have everything. So I'm already starting on that now to get everything ready to go over. I have to prove that it's for boxing and my career and all that stuff. But I'm willing to go get it done now. So when we can press the button on a date, let's just do it and let's just go and get it done. So
I was gonna ask you a little bit about Eddie Hearn. I don't know if you've seen recently, of course, you know, he's with Matchroom and DAZN, but he posted on Instagram the other day like kind of a mock-up of his backyard with a ring and the media and everything kind of like photoshopped in, and he's thinking about having fights out of his backyard to get it going. Which is exciting to see, because it's like, you know, I see the UFC, you know, they're doing, of course, they have another event tonight, but they got Fight Island apparently in the works. And I'm like, man, like, I want these boxing promoters to get on this too, because it's like, you know, the fans want it. Obviously, the fighters, you guys want to fight. So it's good to see that Eddie's trying to make some moves to get creative and get some things done. And, you know, I was curious of like what you thought about that. I know you're with PBC, but it's, you know, who knows how this thing will play out. But he's looking to have like Dillian White and Chisora potentially fight in his backyard. Be quite the scene.
I mean, that's, I think it's a great idea. I think it's a great idea. I'd have no problem fighting behind. It's just like a spar then, you know what I mean? Except for, you know, you're going all out. But, you know, in terms of nobody, not many people being around, but I think it's a great idea. And I think the only way you can do it though is obviously with TV, because there's no point otherwise.
Right.
So it's like the show times and all of that need to get on board and get behind it. I'm very surprised that they haven't already, but I have seen an article from Bob Arum talking about when they do this, you know, everyone needs to get on board, because there's fighters like, at least the article I read, so I'm not going to say it's 100% true, but because I wouldn't believe in a lot of stuff that you read. But but what he was saying, if it is true, was, you know, some fighters are in for some of the gate. And so the fighters, you know, like say Terence Crawford, who's in for some of the gate, if it's on TV, you know, they're going to have to relinquish that little bit of, and not be reimbursed for that financially to make it work. So I think fighters, anyway, at least anyone as hungry as me for it, would be willing to do that and just get paid the purse and move on and just be happy that we were able to do it in these crazy times. So,
yeah, I mean, I think obviously, yeah, losing out on the gate, I can see why guys wouldn't want to miss that. But in terms of the overall like experience for the fans and the fighters themselves, I think it's still super attractive. You know, everyone's sitting around at home right now anyways. There's no sports on. I know the UFC did great numbers last weekend. I think they did 700,000 plus buys. And that was a late fill-in too with their main event. So my point there is that whatever matchup you're going to make and you're going to put on TV is going to get more eyeballs from people who normally aren't even going to watch boxing. Mm-hmm. So it's great for the fighters. It's great exposure. Even if there's no fans in there, and it's really cool watching because you get to hear every blow, you get to hear the corners and everything. So it's like a totally different viewing experience. So I'm excited for it. I hope that boxing takes those steps forward and tries to get stuff like that done. I know Eddie Hearn, like I said, is making progress and seems to be leading the charge, but that's great that Bob Arum seems behind it as well.
Yeah. And, you know, I had seen some, I think PBC might be looking to do it too. So I seen that in the MMA. I didn't watch the whole card. I did see a clip of a guy coming out and he was pretending to wave to the crowds and all that. He was having a bit of fun with it, which seems like something that I would enjoy doing too. So it's good that you can have a bit of fun with it. But again, like I said, there's positives to every negative. And like you said, there would be a lot more eyeballs, you know, the casual person looking on there, and it is great for branding, and it's great to get people interested in boxing again, like more people interested in boxing.
That's so right. Well, to circle back here to your career, I'd like to touch more on sort of your like rise in the pro ranks. I know, you know, of course you had the amateur background in Ireland, and then your eventual move to Australia. So I guess when did you really make that move to Australia? Like, at what point was that in your career, and why did you make that move?
Because I mean, I was looking to go professional, and I had when I had gone to the elite level in amateurs, I had met with Kenny Egan, and he won a silver medal in the Olympics, and I had a fight with him, and even though he beat me, the scores were crazy, and I said, I'll give it another go. And so I went back the following year, you know, because obviously you want to win that and then move on and go to maybe the Olympics, the World Championships was coming up. And I had another fight for it was the World Championships qualifiers. And I actually felt like I'd done quite well in that fight. But again, they had me losing it quite well. And you know, I was just like, you know what, I'm not going to be hanging around here trying to get scores up on a computer, you know what I mean, against guys that are on a substantial amount of money from the IABA. You know, like he did beat me, but I did feel like it was close, but I just felt like I wasn't going to get, if I wasn't already at the top level there at that point, like it felt like it was so far away. But my grandfather, and I'd always felt myself, dude, that I would make a great pro. He had said that, and I knew that too. A couple of people I'd said it to as well, because sometimes in amateur, I sort of, it might take me like, you know, I could have my best round being the third round, and the belt, and at the end of it, I'd be like, looking to go. So it looked like more rounds were going to suit me too. So I decided to go professional, and there was no fights happening in Ireland at the time. Recession had hit hard. This was 2010. I started to consider it, and then I remember when I fought in Australia, Ireland versus Australia. I had a good win here in Brisbane one night, and a promoter here had said, if you ever want to come back and have a fight, you're more than welcome. I decided to utilize that, and it came off quite fast. By the time I got there in January, I had my first pro fight lined up in April. So I thought I'd get here. I did. There was talk of being able to get some sort of a deal going over in Boston. It was only very, very light talk, but I thought that Boston wouldn't be a bad place to end up. But I thought, in order to get a fight, we'll get there quick, we'll go to Australia, we'll have a fight or two, and then it would look better than going to Boston and trying to line up there. Because at that point, you know, I wasn't well known or well established or anything like that, you know, outside of Ireland or whatever. So that was the idea. But when I came here, I just grew roots. I met with some great people. I was given fight after fight after fight. I had 9 fights in my first 12 months. And I was smashing it, you know, and I made some great life changes, and it was good weather, and getting up in the morning, it's warm, you go for your run. It was just, I just thought, you know what, this is brilliant, and if we can keep rolling with it, and like there was Daniel Gill was world champion at that point, and Mundine had been champion at that point, and there had been Danny Green was world champion, and I'm thinking, why can't I be world champion from here? They seem to have more champions than any of the other smaller countries around, like not US or UK, but they seem to have more world champions than the usual countries. So I'm thinking, maybe I can get my opportunities here. And I stayed here, it's been a great journey. I've not looked back, and I've been very, very happy with the decision that I made and to stay.
Yeah. Now the producer of this podcast, French is his last name. But we call him French, and he's an Aussie as well. So I told him that I'd let you know that we got an Aussie on our side as well.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, but no, yeah. I've heard, you know, that's awesome that you made that switch over to Australia and like made that lifestyle change. I know, you know, you've talked about it in some of the past interviews about, you know, really making that decision to live clean and stay off the booze and you know, just kind of refocus yourself and what that's brought you and you know, all the success really that's come your way after that. And you know, I can directly relate. You know, I'm coming up on 8 months myself here. So, nice. We got the Irish blood in us. We like to have a drink or a drink or two. Yeah. So, but yeah, so true, man. I mean, that focus and it's like that clarity that comes with it. It's pretty crazy.
It's good. Like when I drank all my life and it's sort of like I got used to the fogginess, you know. I could go off and I could be a couple of weeks in camp. Like a lot of times I've had slip ups where I would drink, you know, the weekend before national championships or stuff like that. Actually, it's quite common. But there has been times where I'd been on. My first time winning an Irish championship, I actually was 4 weeks off of alcohol, and it actually was the longest period I'd gone since I was a kid, like since I was a teenager. So that'll tell you. And then once I fully got off alcohol and I stayed off it for a good while, I could just see like my weight, because I was a light heavyweight as an amateur. I started my light heavyweight here, and then I got to.
Were you walking around at like 175 plus?
I don't know. Sorry.
The conversion.
No, I know that I would have been.
You're heavy. About
84 kilos. So that's. I think that's a lot heavier.
So you're
84 kilos, and then I'd make 81 for championship or 82 for an international, and that's what it was. And then I got over here, and I struggled for a while until I stopped drinking, because over here I sort of had free rein again and I sort of hit it a little bit harder, believe it or not. I thought I was sort of leaving that behind a little bit, but it sort of came with me then, and I went, wow, this isn't. And I had two wins for two knockouts to start off, and I thought this was good. But just before my third fight, my grandfather fell sick, and so I went back to Ireland. And before he fell sick, I was on the call to him, and he said he recognized I was drunk on the phone, and we chatted for a while, and he recognized that I was, and he just said, "Give up that drink, son, and give it everything you've got." And he gave the phone back to my mom, and I remember sitting there a little bit actually pissed off, and I said, "What's he saying that for, man? Like, why is he like?" You know, and that was just me sort of in denial, but he was dead right. And it wasn't until he fell unconscious, and he didn't regain consciousness again. We went back to Ireland. He was supposed to pass away, and he didn't at that point. But I sort of didn't deal with it very well, and I just hit it hard the whole time I was home. When I got back to Australia, I had a fight a week later, and I had a draw with a guy I should have really destroyed. Now, I still felt like I won the fight, but it was in Melbourne, and they give out draws more than they give verdicts down there. So it's funny, but it's weird. But they actually made it a 5-round fight so as they couldn't give it a draw, and they still gave it a draw. I have no idea why. If you look on any Melbourne boxers thing, you'll see a lot of draws on it. But anyway, that's besides the point. They're just statistics. But then that was a wake-up call for me after that. After I went, you know what? I've been going so well. I got on the piss and I did all of that, and it wasn't good. I had a draw, and now I sort of blemished my record. And I thought, a pro career, it's not like an amateur where you can have a loss, it's all good. A pro is like, these are major setbacks in a fighter's life when you don't get a win. You know, a draw is not too bad, but I'm thinking, if I keep doing this, and then eventually I made the decision. I just said, you know what? It hit me like a ton of bricks. Just one night in particular, I remember having the bottle of beer in my hand, and I just put it down, and it was at a friend's wedding, and I just walked home, and I said, that's the end of that now for me. So that was 9 years ago, and but the mental clarity and the weight just completely dropping off was just phenomenal for me. Like, I just literally got to middleweight by the end of the year. So I started in January. I had my first light heavyweight fight in April 14th, I think. But by October, I was super middleweight champion of Queensland, and then I weighed in as a middleweight for my last fight at the end of the year. So how funny.
All right. Yeah. Once you kind of make that decision, it's just like, wow, you know, I really don't have to be doing it. this to myself anymore. It takes a big weight off the shoulders for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Did you find it was problematic for you as well?
Yeah, man. I was just like, yeah, it was not, you know, it obviously wasn't helping me progress in my career or anything. And, you know, it wasn't fun anymore. There was a lot of aspects, you know, growing up, I'm not going to say I had plenty of great times, you know, partying and boozing and all that. But it started to not become fun. It was just like I was drinking just to drink, and it was, you know, just a total negative, like downward cycle. And it was like, I kind of had a similar moment where there was a Sunday and I was hungover and I'm like, I'm fucking done, you know, I'm done with this, you know, this has gone too far. And you're, like you said, you know, it's a huge, once you kind of make that decision, you get into it a little bit, it's like, you know, a big weight off the shoulders. It's like over with.
Yeah, you do. For me, it's like I either do it or I don't. And once I make the decision that I either do something or that I don't do it, then I completely slip into that mind frame. And it's so crazy because over here, and then my career started to kick off, and you're getting invited to a lot of things, and you know, like charity events, fundraisers, you know, get-togethers, you know, sponsors stuff, conferences. The amount of free drink that was offered up to me, I think it was a blessing because, like, if I just said, okay, I drink now, then I would have been just, everything I went to, I could have just been wasted, you know, and right. I feel like that was a real blessing, so, yeah.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it's not uncommon to see, I mean, especially amongst, there's so many fighters out there and athletes that struggle with it, and, you know, it's motivating for me and for everyone to see people like yourself that, you know, make that decision and have such a great career and a career that's still young and going. And, you know, there's guys like you and Fury and the list really goes on and on. I know he's still drinking a little bit. I don't know what his deal is, but you know, he made that big comeback and he has a great story. So it's like, you know, those stories are just motivating and it's like, fuck, it's like, you know, everyone has their problems, you know? So it's good to see a guy like yourself, you know, overcome that and then accomplish great things. So,
I mean, going on what you said there, Fury is very similar to myself in terms of when mine became, you know, when I had the goal of being Irish champion and that and boxing for Ireland, my life was pretty, I was pretty focused. Like, I drink the odd bit and you'd have the occasional binge and that, whatever. But it was when I achieved that, I sort of went right off the rails. I had nothing greater. I said, I knew I'd go professional at some point, but I hadn't set the goal of follow it and chase it. And so then when I did follow it and chase it and decide to become world champion, then that's when, like, having that goal is something that just completely pushes you. And I think that when once that goal is truly inspires you, that's when you can give away all of those other little guilty pleasures or whatever they may be, or things that don't serve you. And so I think Tyson Fury similar is quite the same story, is quite the same, as in, you know, he was fully focused all his life to be Vladimir Klitschko and do that, and then when he did that, he didn't set any greater goal, and that's when he started to go down a very, very dangerous slope. Again, Irish blood there too as well, so, you know, we can see how crazy that gets, you know. But and then he said for him it was only a matter of hitting a goal to lose weight to start off with. And when he set a goal, he said setting goals is what it is. And I've spoken about this for a very, very long time, that if there's anyone out there and you're struggling with anything in your life, you know, whether alcohol or substance abuse, negative thought, anything, right, all you need to do is really zone in on something that inspires you and set a goal and work towards that, and you'll find that things then seem very, very less important, or those little decisions of will I, won't I, and become a lot easier, you know, than just doing it, because you're inspired and you're following a path. So
100%. Yeah, I mean, even during like these times where, you know, everyone's kind of like quarantined right now, and like it has given, like, to find some silver linings in it, it has kind of put the blinders on a little bit in terms of like what's important and what I need to be focusing on. Cause it's really, you know, we're just, everyone's kind of hanging out doing their thing. So there's not that many distractions, and it's giving us some time to kind of refocus.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%.
Are you doing a lot of, there's probably not gyms or anything that are open, right?
I mean, I have a friend with a home gym there, so I've actually been lucky that I could use that. There's a bag in there and everything else. So I've been able to, with my strength condition program, I was able to get all of that done. I've been able to burst out rounds on the bags. Some days I've had a bit of fun where I've just gone, right, I'm going to burst out 12 rounds of fight intensity. And I've done it. Yeah, it's tough, but I've even done 15 rounds. So in this whole time, I feel like I've been getting a head start on most guys.
Yeah.
On most guys. And I've been staying away from listening to the media and all that, because it was all just, most of it, 90-something% of it is all negative and fear-based. So I've kept myself in a good energy. Still visualizing my goals, putting my energy to that. Not buying in. And for a long time there, like for nearly 2 months, things are open back up again. It seems like the blink of an eye, because I've not been sitting there looking to see what's going on or who's doing what and everything else. I might look at a little clip, you know, a little thing. It's popping up on my YouTube now. Australian pandemic sort of updates, and it might only be 3 to 5 minutes. I might look at that just to see what's going on. But before I knew it, blink of an eye, 2 months had passed. I've been hitting great goals. I've gotten strong as an ox. I've been trying new things. I've been kept busy doing stuff boxing related, family related, and now here we are, and I'm ready to go. So I've really utilized this time and keeping my mind right and my body right. So,
and at this point in your career, are you a guy who spars a lot still, or like the intensity of your spars? I know, you know, talking to some guys, it varies in terms of once they hit a certain point in their career, they like to, you know what I mean? There's certain intensity levels of spars that guys don't really go to anymore. I don't know if that is something you practice.
That's not in my nature. For me, when I spar, I will always spar. What I will always do is, whoever I spar, I will meet that level and I'll go a little level higher. That's how I feel I do it. And so if they want to come up to the, if they want to work harder and meet me at that level, then I'll go a little bit higher again. So so for me, it's about just lowering the volume, because like I can get on the bag. I was on the bag the other day. It's a funny thing actually, and I've no problem talking about it. So sometimes I want to do 16 rounds, right? And I want to do it just to build volume, and then, you know, on the bag. And then other times I'll jump on, I'll do 8 rounds, very high intensity on the bag, right? This is what I've been doing the last few months. And so I sort of build the volume, and then I bring in the intensity, and I just like to be able to do it like that, because periodization is very important, and just being able to do, because you can't smash it out every day. And for me as well, I think it's dangerous if I get too used to doing it at a lower pace, because then I feel like I'll become a little bit lazy. So I like to do a little bit of both, build the volume, practice those things a little bit, you know, with a little bit more whatever, and then bring it in hard and fast. But so one day I said, right, today I'm gonna do it at a lighter intensity. Now the restrictions that opened up here, there was a few more people allowed in the gym, and a few people had come to watch me. And even though I said I was only gonna go, I said 80-90%, and I've got a MyZone belt that shows that. That's a yellow color on my phone, and when it goes past 90%, it goes into red. And mate, because there was people standing there looking, I couldn't keep it out of the red. So there's something really ingrained in my brain, I think, as a fighter, as a spectator sport, that when there's eyes on me, I give it extra and I can't help it. So I waited until the next day to bring it back and do it at a lighter intensity again. But I think that's a good thing, actually, overall. I think it's a good thing. Again, how does that relate back to fighting in a stadium with no audience?
Right.
But I do feel like I know that my career is on the line again, as usual, and I know that there's eyes looking on the camera, and I do feel like it will go well. But there certainly is something about it, and that's what I'm doing now. Anyway, I'm just trying to be honest with you. I feel like now, if you gave me 4 weeks, I could be fit for a fight. Making weight is another thing because I'm a little bit heavier, but I could be fully fit for a fight in 4 weeks.
You're eating a little good at home right now.
Well, listen, my mom was over from Ireland for 3 weeks, and she's very lucky she got home too. But when she was here, mate, I didn't train much. I did small bits. But I was clocking up a fair amount of calories when she was here. She was making some. She's making stews and shepherd's pies and all that kind of stuff. And, it was pretty good. Lots of potatoes.
Yeah. I like that. Awesome. But thinking about like those fights too, which is kind of a cool feel where it's like just you and your team versus another guy and his team, like in an empty arena, it kind of has that like schoolyard feel to it where it's kind of like, meet me here for a little fight, later type feel. So I'd imagine, what these fighters who've done it so far the past week or so, like on the UFC side, but once boxing gets into it, it'll be kind of interesting to see, how these guys take to it.
Yeah, it will be. I feel like, again, I mean, look, I always look on stuff positively, but I feel like it will suit me better. I fought in Ireland in rooms of maybe 10, 20 people, sometimes really small club shows, all that kind of stuff. I've actually fought in a pub in a place called Money and Row, in County Kilkenny, and the room was so small. They put a ring up right in this tiny, tiny little room.
Wow.
And I literally could nearly feel people's breaths on my neck. There was people standing on the side of the ring. And I think I fought him. Oh, man, it's just crazy. Just a tiny little place. But again, I've always, once it's an actual fight and I know it, I really kick in. So if that is the case, I know that I won't be found wanting in that situation. Who knows what the other fighters, especially big fighters that are used to just always fighting stadium fights for the last, decade and stuff like that. That might go against them.
Yeah, right. I'd imagine some guys are could come in flat and, start out slow, and it could be interesting how that plays out for some guys. So I'm excited. Yeah,
it's certainly.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It changes the dynamic, but it is exciting. I want to put my hand up there. I'll go straight out for the next one.
That's awesome. But another kind of topic that I was interested in on your take was there's been a lot of talk about the UFC as a brand moving into boxing. They have Zuffa Boxing. Dana White has talked about getting into it. And then even Mike Tyson on a recent podcast of his, he mentioned that he could be involved in some ways. He didn't really reveal too much. But basically, as everyone knows, boxing is kind of a mess right now in terms of, and always kind of has been, in terms of all the different promotions, all the belts. It's kind of hard for the casual fan to follow in terms of, there's four champions per division, that sort of thing. If there was a way to kind of fix it and have, one belt per division and a really clear ranking system, I'd imagine for a guy like yourself who, at that 154 division, you'd have clear sights on guys right now. So it's like,
yeah, look, mate, I would absolutely love that. Everyone has seen me the last few years. When I was trying to get even the mandatory, like, I kept saying, who do I need to beat? Who do I need to beat? We kept trying to get the best guys we could. And, it's really, really tough. But, if there's a clear way of being able to get someone, if two guys can fight and get to a certain position on one big list, I just think it's going to make it so much easier. Then there's no, but the thing about boxing is people can make up their own rules. There's no set rules. Every sanctioning body has different rules in terms of what goes on and what happens, or at least they say they do. I've seen rules being pulled out of people's asses, right? And so I've seen crazy stuff happen. And, I look over here, I see the NRL and the AFL, the Australian footballer, they all have set rules. And those rules need to be adhered to. And I would love that for boxing. I feel like Dana White's done a great job at UFC to make that happen. People know what they need to do to become champion.
Yeah.
There's guys out there that just can't get the opportunity. They can't get the fight. Those fights should be made.
Yeah.
And I found that I was found it extremely hard to get to where I needed to be. All these letters being wrote to certain commissions and sanctioning bodies, and you're getting messages back from their lawyers, you know, if you do this, you can do that, but if you don't do that, and it's just like, oh, what's going on here? Just surely if I just beat this guy, I can get myself in a position. But anyway, it's a tough gig, and I would love to see some real rules set out so we can sit there and go, right, here's how we can map our way to the top. And yeah, one champion does excite me also, because that's,
yeah.
I mean, my goal is not just to be world champion, it's to unify them, because I don't feel like it's complete
right.
just having one. For me, I got to have them all. And like you said, fighters are on different sides of the street. I just think that that's ludicrous. That's absolutely ludicrous. Everyone should be fighting everybody. That's my thoughts.
Yeah, so. No, 100%. It's like, I really hope it happens, honestly, whether it's Dana White or Eddie Hearn or whoever, but I know that is kind of the talk lately, which is good that people are thinking that way, because I want to see, you know, this is the heavyweight champ, this is the light heavyweight champ, and so on down the weight classes. And it's just clear that this is the guy, he has the belt now, this is the ranking system behind him. And, you know, of course, then the best are going to be fighting the best. I think it gets rid of the stigma of guys taking a loss and that being the, you know, the end of the world, end of their career. Mm. I think that's a huge problem in boxing. Guys are scared to take a loss, partly due to the fan base. I think a lot of the fans are, I don't even know what the term would be, spoiled, or they are too obsessed with like Floyd Mayweather's perfect record. And they're like, oh, you gotta be undefeated. It's like, the MMA model right now is really winning. Like, I hate to say it, like, I'm a fan. I hate to say it kind of like, I, of course boxing's number one for me, but it's, their model is great, because fighters can lose because they're forced to fight the best. So it's like, yeah. You know, guy loses, like, you know, he'll be back. He'll get right back in there. And the rankings are clear, and the champ is, you know, there's only one per division. So.
Yeah. I'm with you, man. I really feel that too. Cause I genuinely feel like I can beat everybody. So I get the right run of things again. And look, I know I can beat anyone, get a fight under my belt and beat everyone. I think it's the guys that don't truly believe that they can beat everybody are sort of hoping. I've seen guys getting world championship fights like they just, all credit to the fighter themselves, but they'll fight everyone outside the top 15 and then they're lumped in. They'll beat someone outside the top 15 and they're moving up the rankings. You're just like, what? Like, I mean, I don't really understand that at all. It makes no sense to me. After I had that controversial loss to Munguia, which I believe I won, but anyway, I'm not crying about it. I slipped to number 3, right? Teixeira was number 2, but then Carlos Adames, is it? Got into number 1. Now, how did he get straight past Teixeira? How did he get straight past me, right? Whatever about me, how did he get straight past Teixeira? Like, there's no way in hell he should have, like, because Teixeira had a win on the same card that I fought Munguia. Now, I'm not crying about it, because Teixeira went off and beat him anyway. But I'm sitting there confused, losing faith in boxing, going, you know, I'm trying to get a rematch here. If I'm not, who do I need to beat to get there? And then they're like, oh, well, you know, you can fight Teixeira. I'm like, but hold on, but what's the point in fighting Teixeira when Carlos Adames has gone in at number 1?
Right.
You know, we said, can we make it for an eliminator? They said no. I said, well, so what's the point then? And then we got the WBC middleweight title fight. But in the meanwhile, then Teixeira fights Adames. So I don't know exactly, you know, what's all supposed to happen or anything else. I just love a clear system. And
right.
I just feel like that's all just everybody just pulling stuff out, you know, because... Yeah, but anyway, just to clear that up again, when Adames was 1 and Teixeira was 2 and I was 3, they wouldn't give us the spot for number 1. You know what I mean? So what's the point? Like, and Carlos was number 1, so it just didn't make sense to me how he could have got in there and bypassed me and Teixeira. So anyway, it doesn't matter. Yeah.
Right. No, yeah, I hope they figure it out. And what weight do you think, you're going to be looking to, are you going to continue to move up and down, or is there?
No, middleweight is not my weight. I knew that from the start. I tried to have a faith that I was middleweight before, and all of that, but not at this level of competition, you know. I still feel like I could outbox Charlotte. I know a lot of people will laugh at me for saying that, but I think essentially at the end of it, I think that the power was the difference. And I think at 154, those bigger guys don't have that power. So I feel like they shouldn't really beat our bigger guys at that. So they'll either be a decent 154 like myself, or else they will lack power. Like, say, Munguia, for example. I don't know how he's going to go at middleweight, but all I know is if he is a true middleweight or even super middleweight, you know, when you got him cut that weight, it does make it fairer for the other 154ers. It certainly feels like that for me. So, if you know, so that's, I feel anybody at 154, if you're making weight on the scales of 154, I reckon I've got your number. And I reckon that's across the board with all 154s right now. I reckon I've got all of their number and I'm coming for it. So.
That's awesome. Yeah. Is there any guy right now at 154 that, you know, you would like?
Yeah, I would absolutely love Textura. Oh my God. That would be a match made in heaven. I love Southpaws. Absolutely love them. So, I would love that fight now. It's funny now because he's the world champion at that way, but I think I've heard he's going to be fighting Costana. So I got to hang back and wait for what happens there. But next in line would be Rosario. I had some good sparring with Rosario. He's a great fighter, mate. We all knew he was going to beat Williams because I sparred with him.
That was surprising for a lot of people.
Well, I sparred with Rosario. It wasn't surprising for me, mate. He punches like a mule, and he's got a real patient style where he'll let you throw a good few punches and he'll just block them with a real solid guard. And he'll just wait and he'll time you and he'll catch you with a big shot and he'll light up on you. So he sort of goes from 20% intensity to 100 real quick, and he's very patient and he waits for it. So, but I feel like I would have the movement for that and all. Like, I know we're talking through sparring here, so I'm not saying anything bad. I'm actually giving him massive ups. I'm giving Rosario huge ups. Mm-hmm. But because he's got the belts that I want, I will say that I truly believe that I can beat him. And, you know, because I don't feel like I would be in the position that Williams was in when he got caught. And I don't think I wouldn't take Rosario for granted. I feel like Williams may have done that also.
Yeah. You know? I think a lot of people underestimated Rosario, like, in that matchup. I don't think many people knew too much about him. And like you said, he packed a huge punch that I don't think Williams was expecting. You know, he seemed like he lulled him to sleep at times.
And his style is he'll do nothing for a while. He'll sort of block your punches and not want to get hit, and then he'll sort of just wait till you're gassing a little bit or just at that lower end of your energy spectrum about to get a breath, and he you cannot throw a lazy jab against him. Let me tell you, he is waiting. So listen, I had great work with him. You know, he punched like a mule when we were sparring and all of that, and I had great respect for him. And I knew he, and some guys that were on my team, I forgot to load up. And I don't even bet, but I was going to bet on him because McGregor was fighting that time. That same day, he was fighting Cerrone. So I went and watched that, and then all of a sudden I was getting messages through, Rosario has done it. We've got him at 11-1. So a lot of my buddies that were with me and my teammates were with me. They made quite a few quid off that. Mate, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
I don't know if you can edit this or whatever, but I really badly need, I've drank a lot of water, and I need to use the toilet.
Yeah, go ahead. We can.
Is that cool? Okay. Yeah. Thanks a lot for that, buddy.
Yeah, no worries. So jump back in. I know you mentioned the McGregor Cerrone fight that you were tuned into. That you know, a lot of people are talking about McGregor and some of his recent comments, and even Mike Tyson actually recently gave him some props for his performance against Mayweather in their first boxing match. I don't really know what to think about it. I mean, I think it credit to him for stepping in. I mean, he has huge balls to step in against Mayweather, and obviously he was getting that huge payday, so that was, like, you know, an extra motivation there, obviously. But What were your thoughts like on his overall performance in that fight? I know there's a lot of mixed opinions. People say it was a total joke. Some people give him credit. Skill wise, what were your thoughts on that?
I'll just tell you my honest opinion. Money Mayweather's thing is, was it give the fans what they want, and for the money involved, I think he did that. He completely changed his style. Like, he made Canelo look like a school kid, you know. and I just feel like, you know, again, I give McGregor massive props for what he's done, especially against Cerrone. Like, that was a phenomenal win. He just went in and blasted him. So, but in terms of just boxing alone, I feel like what Mayweather did, he just didn't outbox him and just make him look silly. He just changed his style completely and just started to move forward and gas him, because obviously we've seen McGregor gas in the past. And he knew that was a problem, and Mayweather completely just went and did that, and I just think he just did it so easily too. I think McGregor could be a good boxer, but I'm just like, because, you know, I've heard through the grapevine that they're going to fight again, that fight is actually made. You know, I've heard that, and I feel nearly just like, right, okay, I can see why they're doing it again, but I won't be watching. I'm not one bit interested,
right?
And in that at all, because it's like, right, okay, hold on, you got hammered before, right? What's the difference here? Well, Mayweather's older and he's inactive, so is this just McGregor trying to beat an older Mayweather, an older man? Like, what's the goal to be achieved here by fighting that fight except money? And I think that it's not good to just do that to people, and people will tune in and they probably will make a lot of money, but I'm not interested. I don't want to have to look at that circus all over again when I don't believe in it. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think the first time it was cool that they got it done and it was a huge spectacle, but it's like, now, not only do I not want to see it right now, but it's like, McGregor just came back. He had that great win against Cerrone, and it's like he's super talented in MMA, and he still has a lot on the table to achieve, really. I mean, he's achieved a ton, but, you know, with a guy like him, a guy who's great and a guy that, you know, you really believe in his talent in MMA, it's like, for him to leave some on the table now, I think it would be a shame, because he could really achieve you know, even more in MMA. So I hope he just stays on that side and moves forward. But yeah, I have heard a lot of rumors about, you know, them still looking to do that fight again. So I hope it doesn't happen for at least some time, because I want him in the octagon, not the ring.
Well, I'll just tell you though, my goal right now would be obviously become world champion and you know, to fight another Irishman for a world title, it's actually never been done, and I want to make history. That's been my goal for a lot of years. And Spike O'Sullivan, as I really like Spike, and I've sparred against him and his coach Packy, I've always said that. And so if I could win a world championship, right, and get the job done to Irishmen, I feel like I'd put the feelers out to McGregor then and say, let's all get cashed up here, because he said he wants a world championship. I believe two Irishmen in Crow Park, you know, if apparently O'Sullivan, if Teixeira can get through Castano, O'Sullivan, Spike would be world champion. Obviously, I'd love for him to give me that fight, but he'd probably put the feelers out to McGregor. Who knows? But I do feel like he will fight for a world championship, just to do it, just to get it on his list or whatever. Because he's got that pull now, hasn't he? Like, he can just roll in and do it. All he'd need is a kill to get into the world rankings, and do that, because he generates so much money. Every sanctioning body would be throwing their knickers at him, as they say, the red panties. So it just is what it is. Like, he's one of those guys too. He's created an unbelievable brand for himself, that even when he has a loss, his brand gets bigger.
Yeah.
He's a market genius, and he's a great MMA fighter, and again, look, if that fight actually was legit and Mayweather was actually, you know, doing his best, well, then he did put in a good performance, he did. But I don't think that Mayweather did his very best in that, and I think he could have just rolled with it, and he could have made sure McGregor didn't hit him once, not even once. I feel that's the talent that Mayweather possesses. So to do it all again is a, I know that Manny Pacquiao was chasing that fight with
McGregor. I know. I think Pacquiao's chasing it too, which is if Pac-Man wants to do it, I mean, he let him do what he wants. You know, he's a legend, but it's like, I don't want to see it. I don't want to see it. Like, I just like go for now. You know what I mean? Like, hey, if you, once you get your title and you want to bring him back in and get that money, go ahead. Like, I'd be happy to see that. Leave Manny alone for now.
But the funny thing about Manny is though, Manny wouldn't hold back. You know, Floyd is all about, you know, maybe we'll do it again. You know, I'll roll with it and I'll give the fans what they want to see. Manny Pacquiao would be in there looking for blood. So right. It's a completely different fight.
Yeah, you know what I mean? that could end very badly for McGregor.
It could. So, look, again, when they look at money, I think McGregor is very money motivated. So he said in his, I watched the interview with him and Tony Robbins, I believe, is now a mentor of his, but he spoke about hitting the billy. I was like, what's the billy? But it's a billion. Yeah. So he's looking at, that's a goal of his, hitting a billion. And if that's his goal more than anything else right now, but I would think boxing is his way forward. So unfortunately, we gotta so as true boxing fans and active in the fighting game, we gotta suffer the whole, you know, watching 12 weeks of this stuff go on, the circus that happens with it and everything else. But
yeah,
whatever.
But to focus on Manny though, I'm curious, like, what you think about what's left for him. What does he have in the tank? I mean, he's such a legend, and I think, you know, maybe he does have one great all-time performance left in him. I know they're talking about him and Mikey Garcia, but 147, as we know, is just a shark tank of a division, and there's no easy fight in sight. So,
look, he's done brilliant. He's brilliant, Manny, and what he's achieved and everything that he's done is just phenomenal. To do it at his age too, for someone like myself at 35 years of age, listen, I've got no hang-ups about my age at all. I feel like I still have the best years in me. For me, it's not years though, it's goals. It's become a world champion, defending it in Ireland, going after the champions and unifying the belts. That's where I see my career finish, and I don't see anything else. But to see people like Manny Pacquiao still being around his best, it's a different style of fighting, of course. Before, it was just all in, guns blazing, but now he's smarter. But again, to see him doing that at his age is very motivational, inspiring for someone like myself who's going past the standard age of where a boxer is in his peak for the weight category that I'm in. So so it's great to see him do his thing, and he is the people's champion, and he's a great fella. He's well done to him in his career.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I hope he doesn't take a fight against like a Terence Crawford or Errol Spence. I just think they'd be too much for him right now.
But you reckon they're too much? Okay, yeah. Well, but what about Thurman? I know Thurman was coming off, he would have had a bit of ring rust there and everything else, but I think, but you think that those guys, Garcia and Spence, they're different animals to Thurman, you feel?
I think I like a fight against I like a fight between Manny and Mikey Garcia. I think it's a little bit more. I think that's a better fight for Manny than Manny versus Terence Crawford or Errol. I think Errol is you know, he's a big welterweight, and he's young and same with Terence. So I just feel like they'd be a little much for Manny, but I mean, who knows? Manny, I was shocked by Manny's performance against Thurman. You know, that performance against Thurman, I was shocked. Manny came out, knocked him down the first round, and he had the place going nuts. Like, I was in shock. I thought Thurman was not going to handle him easily by any means, but I just thought he was going to be able to win that fight. It just seemed like Manny was losing some of what he, you know, losing a little bit of explosiveness in his legs. But
yeah,
I can't doubt him. I mean, he pulled it off. He won.
What about that Thurman saying, what was it? It's pretty much how we knocked him down. It's pretty much, and you see the memes where Dermot's talking it up, and then it goes back. Yeah, he's to like, that.
How's he gonna beat me up with those little T-Rex arms? And meanwhile, I was like, smoked. You got cooked up.
Wow. I think Manny's a little bit like me in that respect. If he sort of heard that and said, "Well, I'm gonna do that now." So, it worked out really well. Actually, I'm very, very. It was cool to see that he could still do it too with those little T-Rex arms.
Yeah, it was good to see. He's a legend. Yeah. So, yeah, man. There's a lot of good fights on the line. So I just hope everything gets back to normal soon. I hope PBC starts finding some ways to get some fights done during these times. It's exciting to see Eddie Hearn making those moves for his backyard fights, which I think would be kind of hilarious. Bob Arum, he could probably get some things going as well. So, but I appreciate you coming on, man. It means a lot for you to come on all the way from Australia, taking some time to talk. So that was awesome, man. I appreciate that.
No, I appreciate it. Good chat. I really enjoyed it. And I love what you're doing, man. So keep the podcast coming and keep people entertained, especially throughout this time. And hopefully boxing is back on track, and then I can do my thing in the ring. But you heard it here again. I will be 154 champion, and that is coming, and I'm chomping at the bit to get back again. So let's do it.
Hey, I believe it. I believe it. I'm excited for it. So tell everyone where to follow on Instagram, social media, all that, so they can, continue to follow your career and what you're up to.
Yeah, cool. So just Dennis Hogan on Facebook, Dennis Hogan Boxing on Instagram, Dennis_D_Hogan at Twitter. So, thanks very much for all the support that I've had. I actually was blessed to see the amount of support that I had in Brooklyn when I was there for the last fight. You know, people coming out of woodwork, coming over, wishing me well and saying congrats after the performance too, on a good performance. And I was pretty much overwhelmed with all the love that I was getting over there. And, people even after were hanging out for me outside the Barclays, just to see and meet me and everything else. And even after a loss, that felt very, very special. So again, that means the world to me, all the love I got as well on Instagram, especially Instagram, after it, from people from America and all of that. I owe it to you guys to go back there and do it right the next time. So thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Hey, I appreciate it. We can't wait, man. You're a guy who fights with his heart and everyone can appreciate that. And you're definitely a fan favorite. So I can't wait for you to get back in there and get that belt wrapped around your waist, man. So I appreciate it again. Everyone go follow on The Pod Matrix on YouTube, subscribe, and also follow me on Instagram, Brooklyn Boxing Podcast, and on Twitter as well. So look for this episode to drop soon. Thanks again.